There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome, welcome into NFL Friday, your WFUV Sports home for all news around the most interesting football league in the world, the National Football League. Super Bowl 60 is in the books. The Seahawks defeated the Patriots 29-13. Bad Bunny played his halftime show. I thought it was awesome. I'd throw the first take out right in the intro.
It was awesome.
I'm Tucker Austin, joined by Brendan Shorey and Chris Carino. The three of us, along with Joe Henry, Griffin Stevenson, and Owen Kelty, if you didn't know, we're out in San Francisco. We represented WFUV Sports and Fordham University at Radio Row. Got to go see all the player availabilities, ask some questions, maybe caused a couple of funny moments, maybe one funny moment in particular that went remotely viral.
You're talking about Griff?
No, I'm talking about the shadow boxing.
Oh,
that was Mr. Owen Kelty's question that triggered that mass shadow boxing event in the Seahawks availability.
And just because you say viral, we got to talk about Brendan almost taking on and beating Mac Hollins in chess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Joe...
viral in my head.
Joe valiantly sacrificed himself to Mac Hollins to get some questions in. Joe dispatched in under 3 minutes, I think it was.
Yeah.
Joe Henry, unfortunate performance for him. But Shorey, Mac Hollins said you were like the best of the day, right?
He did. He said I was the best game of the day afterwards. Chris asked him. But the funniest part to me is whenever, for any chess ball knowers out there, I castled, and it's basically, for those who aren't the chess ball knowers here, you're able, if you haven't moved your king, and if you're not moving him through check, you can move your king over twice, switch him with the rook, and move the rook over inside. And he had said he hadn't pulled that one out all day because he was worried that people were going to be like, what are you doing? And then I castled first, and that's when he told me that, and he was like, oh, well, I got a fellow chess player on my hands. But overall,
a little sign of respect.
It was a little bit of a sign of respect.
Just guys castling.
A couple of guys having a good castle on the chessboard. But yeah, and I think the
Super Bowl touchdown scorer, Mac Hollins.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the entire video, if it was about 4.5 minutes long. So if that says anything about our game, and it was 3 minutes on the clock each,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was crazy. He had like a special little board that like lit up with things like
if you made it.
Well, I mean, it was like a la chess.com a little bit. It was like the physical board.
It's their board. Yeah,
I did not know this
because I have a best friend who really likes chess and has been getting into chess a bunch the last couple months. And I sent her the board, and she was like, "Yeah, that's couple $100s on chess.com."
It was a really nice board.
It's so odd. Lights up with like what you can and can't do. It'll like turn red if you make a move that is illegal.
It's the board you play on if you're a star wide receiver in the NFL and you love chess.
True. And you can afford the board.
That was what I was implying. Yeah,
I picked that up.
Also, his signature look never wavered while we were there.
Mac Hollins did not have shoes on.
No, he didn't.
Oh, he was not there for you. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that Patriots availability was like under a tent in the parking lot of their hotel. It was the Marriott in Santa Clara.
Yeah, talk about the different elements between the two teams, Tucker. Maybe it was more than just a team maybe being more talented than the other. Maybe one team was set up better than the other.
Yeah, the Seahawks had they were inside the San Jose Convention Center, and they had like a whole room like to themselves, and it was nice and quiet in there. You get plenty of good audio. You had that fun moment, like we already talked about it, the cross room moment where they're like, you got Seahawks players like yelling at each other from across the room and like shadow boxing in every corner.
And not to mention that the press conferences for the Seahawks were in an entirely different room than the availability for all the players.
Yeah. Oh my
whereas
God.
The Patriots, the press conference was on one side of the room, and then the room just opened up for everyone.
It's like constant chatter just going on, like during the press conference for Mike Vrabel and the players who were available after him those 2 days.
They treated one team like they beat Jared Stidham in the conference championship week, and they treated one team like they beat Matt Stafford in the conference championship week. That's all I'm going to say on a biased note toward that. And I think it made sense. I mean, you can't give both teams the perfect elements. Yeah, the Seahawks elements might have been perfect. But the Patriots could all use that to their advantage. Oh, we're this grinder, warrior, gritty team. Like, maybe they should have used the tent to sort of their identity throughout the week. Instead, they maybe complained about
it. Took it personal a little bit.
For me, it feels more like a thing that, like, you just got to try and put that out of your minds. You know, if you're the Patriots, you just, like, kind of don't let that rattle you and move on. That was a lot of what Mike Vrabel and Mike McDonald actually said, was just, like, trying to keep things as normal as possible and keep all of the noise out. That was an answer from a lot of the players, too, about, like, just, what do you do when you're out of practice? It's literally just trying to stay quiet and, like, stay attached to the task at hand.
Yeah,
I suppose. But let's get some perspectives on the whole week. We should say before we get into the actual game itself. I want to look at the week as a whole, because we flew out there Tuesday afternoon before the Super Bowl as a group, all six of us. We found our Airbnb in Daly City. Shout out our host Michelle. Her place was awesome.
Shout out Michelle.
Great location, San Francisco. I'd never been to California before, so, like, I don't know about you guys, but that was a really awesome experience. The first thing we did, we went to In-N-Out.
Feels like
literally the
true
first
California
thing
experience
off the plane, straight to In-N-Out.
Feels like our priorities were in the right place.
Absolutely,
I think they definitely were.
Yeah,
there was like a moment of actual, like, there was like a tourist moment almost, like when we actually got off the train station. Like, we took the air train from the airport out to whatever stop was closest to the In-N-Out. And, like, when I got off we walked out of the station and saw, like, the hills, like, perfect blue sky, saw, like, the
palm trees.
Crazy hills, the palm trees everywhere. It was a movie-esque moment, at least for me, of just, like, oh, we're here. Right. We, like, made it to San Francisco.
Not even to mention, like, we went into this trip dressed because we were planning for the cold New York morning on the way, and then we get there, we get off the plane, and everyone immediately starts taking off hoodies, taking off jackets.
I'm layered. Like, first thing I did inside the airport in San Francisco was found a bathroom and switched shorts. It was too much. I was wearing, like, black sweatpants. That was not going
to
fly.
I regretted the sweatpants as soon as I got there, and as soon as we got to the Airbnb, I changed as well.
You guys are shorts guys. I can't do it. I mean, even in the summer, I'm a big jeans t-shirt guy. Big pants guy. It's not even due to my frail legs, which I will admit exist. But it's more, I just don't like the proportions of it. I think pants look better just in every outfit, and I don't have that physical tie or pull that you guys necessarily have, where you feel this freeness that comes from shorts. I don't get that at all.
I don't know. I feel like
I'm naturally colder too.
It's less about the it's less about the mental game and more about the physical game, I would say. Would you agree, Brendan? I think it's more about functionality and, like, just like internal temperature control.
Functionality, it's freeing, and then it's also, like, obviously, I'm coming from Texas, where I'm used to 110 degree heat in the summer, where you can't really wear pants, and then even in, like, the winter, like this last Christmas, it was 70 degrees, so I was wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Disgusting. I actually loved it.
Disgusting.
And by proportions, you mean, like,
it's like that
amount of clothes that you're wearing on the bottom versus on the top.
Well, yeah,
like
that
shirt.
Yeah,
because I personally, like, summer. At least summer in northern New Jersey, in the foothills of the Appalachians, when it gets, like, a little chilly at night, and it's, like, maybe, like, a cool 50, maybe dipping under 50 once the sun goes down, and you get the sweatshirt shorts combo.
Yeah.
And that's comfortable by a fire. That's comfortable.
You're a big sweatshirt short guy. Like, you
I mean, I'm a big sweatshirt guy in general.
We've traveled a lot together. Like, you, that is your move. I'm more of a, like, not even necessarily the color or the style of what I'm wearing, but I like the shape. I'm a big shape guy. I think the shape of my outfits is very important. Yeah. I know that's like very niche and stupid, but I think the shape is important, and I think it kind of goes to what you're saying. Like, I think jeans just proportionately in shape, in a shape perspective, look better in the summer with a t-shirt. Obviously not like the beach, but like, you know, I'm also a Boston Clog guy on the beach, on the sand.
Really?
I think that's a great move. Or Sanuk. What do you know about Sanuks?
I know nothing about Sanuks.
I know Tucker knows about Sanuks. He's from New Jersey. You know about them.
I'm flip-flops or slides.
Okay, just to bring it back to Super Bowl, I had a question.
San Francisco is a big jeans city.
It is a big city.
There's
Tucker,
your segue.
You're a big tourist guy. Talk about segues. You're a big tourist guy.
I don't like to call myself a tourist, but if I'm in a new city, I like to go see some like history. I mean, it's more about history. Less than the sights and more about the historical significance of said sites.
He's a historical sightseer.
Sure, yeah, go with that.
Big historical sightseer.
Yes.
San Francisco is a fantastic place for that, whether it's the architecture built in to the more unique terrain there, or it's just the historical value of everything around you. Mm-hmm. I want to ask from both of you, I'll answer as well, what was your favorite thing you saw that didn't have to do with football?
Okay.
Walking around, and you can't choose, Brendan, when we walk past Jamar Chase on the sidewalk, because he does play football, unfortunately, because that would have been mine as well.
But seeing him had nothing to do with football.
That's what I'm. I
get it though.
Don't talk me into it.
Trying to find loopholes here.
But non-football favorite thing and favorite football thing that didn't necessarily have to do with football. That can either be a fun interview you did, a guy you just enjoyed being around, or just the general people that we were rubbing shoulders with, the general environments that we were finding ourselves in. I'll start with Tucker. Tucker, non-football around San Francisco. Where were you? What jumps out to you when I just say that? Let alone your answer.
I have to shout out Chinatown. I don't know if it's going to be
good,
my
good
pick,
one. I don't know if I would have said that. It's a great call.
Walking through that Chinatown in San Francisco was really, really cool.
I've been bragging about it. I was in Chinatown in New York for Valentine's Day, and I said I think the Chinatown in San Francisco was better.
And exactly, like, having been to Chinatown in New York and been like to other China, I've been to Chinatown in Montreal. It was actually pretty cool, but Chinatown in San Francisco was on another level.
Truly,
that the tunnel between like downtown, where it like switched over,
felt like you were entering like a portal. Down.
It did. It really did. And it was like a tunnel under a street that was above it. It was just like more grid. And then when you popped out of the tunnel, it's a brand new world. All the street lamps are different. All the buildings are constructed relatively the same. We saw that crazy chase. That
had the architecture of an old
looked like a
Chinese
restaurant,
building.
Dude. It was insane.
There was like a live performance going on.
Yeah,
too.
No, it was a block party. Like the street was closed. There was a stage at the end of the street. Absolutely insane. They clearly know how to have a good time over there.
All right, Brendan. Aside from the pigskin,
I think
I'll give Tucker time to answer his football one.
I think you. And no shade, Tucker, but the last night we were there.
Just the one time you weren't there, Tucker, was great.
Well, no. So the last night we were there, we went to the boardwalks. We walked through the wharfs, made it to Ghirardelli Square, and then ended up walking up, and it was dark at this point. We stopped by some park and played on the little playground that said it was meant for children's age 7 to 12.
And that was a great time.
That was a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, they had some nice swings, a cool little
unique
net
jungle
to climb.
Gym. Yeah, unique jungle gym down there in California. The kids have it too good.
7 to 12, it entertains us too at the age of 21 and 22.
Yeah, more than entertaining.
7 plus 12 is 19, and that's close enough.
It is close enough. but once we got to the top, we got to where Lombard Street was, little street that kind of twirls.
Yeah,
around.
I saw you post a photo from the top of that.
I had to do a little artsy moment there where I stood in the middle of the street, took a photo down, and you could see the twisting and turning Lombard Street, and then in like the background, it was just a backdrop of the city, and then the Golden Gate Bridge lit up in the very back of that. So I would probably have to say that was probably my coolest thing, like sightseeing wise.
And I think in tandem with that, I don't know if this is my answer, but the tower we went to and that view from Alcatraz with that United States flag sort of in the wind in between us and Alcatraz, that was
just
fantastic.
For general reference, it was the Coit Memorial Tower.
There we go. Historical sightseer.
See, I
would have
known the name.
Yeah. Historical sightseer right there. That's why we have them around.
I knew about it, found out we were close to it, and was like, guys, we're going.
And it was a heck of a walk, too.
It was something
so
of a
stairs.
Walk. Yeah, never Can seen you... a sidewalk that was just stairs.
I'll give my answer aside from football, but first, Tucker, can you give a brief or the brief historical context you gave me when we were up there about
the
Great Depression?
Oh, yeah. So the tower, the tower's namesake was a woman from at San Francisco. I'm not going to remember her first name or like her total significance to the city, but her last name was Coit, and she died with a considerable amount of money to her name. And so she left, I think it was a third of her estate to the city for purposefully earmarked for beautification, like because she loved San Francisco so much. So she earmarked that money, and they weren't really 100% sure what to do with it. Great Depression rolls around. Things are not looking good everywhere else. Like economy is in shambles, a lot of unemployment. Nothing is really getting built, but they still have this money earmarked. So there's like a couple of people left in San Francisco, like owners of big companies and like proprietors with a lot of money. They kind of pooled the rest of the money that was necessary in addition to Coit's money to build this tower as like a monument to her and to the city, sort of. It's literally just a beautification project. But when they originally built the tower, all they built was the tower, because it's the Great Depression. You're not going to like build the whole nice park that's now around right. it with like infrastructure to actually get up to the tower. So for the longest time, it was literally just this big white tower sitting on Beacon Hill in San Francisco with no real way to get up to it. It's just like shrubbery and hill. It was like almost impossible to get up there. And it was like in the early 2000s, I think, when they finally scraped enough money together again to like re-beautify the area around it. But I just thought it was cool because, like, after all that, the off chance that we came there 20 years after that happened and were actually able to walk all the way up to the tower. Yeah. And we saw, like, the Bay Bridge, Alcatraz. Alcatraz looked really cool. Even from distance, Alcatraz was really cool. If there was, like, a close second to seeing that Chinatown, I think, like, the view from that tower. So, kind of stealing yours, Chris, but...
No, that wasn't even my... I'm still kind of percolating on mine, I think, and I love that context. That kind of stuff is great. I feel like it brings a sort of close... It brings you closer to the city knowing those sort of things.
History is just awesome like that.
Yeah, and I think... I liked the trolley car a lot, like the first
night. Oh, the streetcar. That was awesome.
The streetcar, we went down the first night to the wharf just to kind of get food, and that was super cool. Interacted with, they had like the NFL shop truck there.
Had a lot of good crab.
Yeah.
A lot of good crab.
Yeah, right next
there.
To where we were eating, they had like sort of an NFL thing set up. The guy who was there was really cool. We talked for a while. It was just cool in general, aside from football, meeting people in that area. They were all coming from such different places, even at the game. You know, this is more football related, but I had... two Seattle native season ticket holders next to me and a guy from Australia in front of me who had never been to a Seahawk game and was like a diehard Seahawk fan. Like that sort of camaraderie, even two brothers who I think were twins behind me who were also Seattle natives, like having that sort of camaraderie in a space where as a fan, I haven't been able to have that as a New Jersey Seahawk fan. That was the part that was coolest to me. Tuck, we can start with you or Brendan on the football thing that isn't necessarily like, you know, you loved how Kenneth Walker ran on Sunday. It's more like, you know, I enjoyed seeing Timmy Takes or, you know, not necessarily football adjacent. What was your favorite?
Oh,
I'll start with either of you.
I mean, just like.
I have some ideas if you want me to throw them out.
Being in the same building as like Jackson Dart and Cam Scadder. Actually,
rubbing shoulders with that.
The first thing I saw when I walked into Radio Row on the third day when we were like getting ready to set up and everything, literally first thing I see when I walk into the room with everybody there is just Jackson Dart. At the overtime, or
with the lightsaber, right?
With a lightsaber,
yeah, that
was really
cool.
First thing I saw, and I like had to keep moving and like go because we were going to get set up. But like internally, I was like, "Yeah, I think 10-year-old me would have just lost his marbles."
Yeah,
that's like it's unbelievable. But best football adjacent thing. Actually, this was particularly cool to me because I've never had the opportunity to feel like this close to. Some like a viral moment, you know, or like online fame in general, you know, like the KD post was close when we got KD at Fanatics Fest or someone at WFUV. I think was that Joe who got that video.
It was Joe.
Yeah, so that was like cool and being
and we close got another
to that,
Bleacher Report like, post as well. We got I think it was either you or Joe was the Chess Mac Hollins post. That was
yeah,
the second
one
since then. The KD
so
post.
That was cool, but I also thought it was really cool that we got to interview the guys who are technically responsible for the Emerald City Route Artist.
I was going to say that. I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
How awesome was that?
The Snapback Sports guys.
First of all,
it was
Snapback.
We also
got
Snapback
was funny. Stay Hot. Yeah.
The Stay Hot crew.
Yeah. Shout out to Stay Hot Pod crew.
They do great work.
They were really, I mean, they were really chill.
Like very how fun they make sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the interview was just really awesome.
A lot of the Sphere takes it too seriously. They do not.
No. Especially, no, not with that nickname.
Not in a bad way, in a good way.
And even on a serious note, I enjoy their player breakdowns, their film breakdowns, that type of thing.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Ekra's so funny.
Ekra's amazing. I always tell people that, like, when they're like, oh, like, did you get any guests, like, whenever you guys were interviewing
people?
Yeah,
we got
Ekra. Yeah. And I say we got a couple of guys from NFL Network, and then I list Judy Bautista and Baldinger. And then I go, we got a guy from Snapback Sports who went viral on TikTok, Timmy Takes. And then I say, you know, the viral nickname, Emerald City Route Artist. Yeah, we got the guys who coined it.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And Brendan, I have, and this might be teasing slightly or spoiling, but you have a few. I mean, there's a few specifically from Radio Row. If you want to go in the boom variety, if you want to go in the 90s cowboy variety, there's a few ways for you to go here. Where are you going to go?
I honestly don't know which to pick out.
And refer to what I'm referring to,
So I'll start with the 90s Cowboys variety.
Okay.
One day we walk in and we are going
there's
to the
table.
There's
two now that I think about it. I didn't even think there is two.
Yeah, we're going to the table and all of a sudden, standing 5 feet to the left of the table is Barry Sanders. I'm like, oh my God, guys, that's Barry Sanders. I'm like, yeah. Anyways, I'm like, all right, Chris, you want to go do a lap? We go to do a lap. Before we even get to the walkway, I turn around and grab Chris by the chest. I'm like, oh my
that
God,
was scary.
Look.
I didn't know what was happening.
He didn't know what was going on. I'm like, oh my God, look. Emmett Smith walks 2 feet in front of us going left to right. And I just saw arguably the two best running backs to ever play the game in a five-minute span, one of which played for the Cowboys back in their dynasty days in the 90s.
It's kind of the agreed take. Those are the two best running backs of all time. To say anybody else is in those guys' tier is...
I could argue Walter Payton.
Maybe.
What's even better is that's still not the funniest interaction with a cowboy that Brendan
Right, go on. No,
that's the next one I'm going to. Anyways... We see Michael Irvin walking around, and so we're like, oh, like, that's that. I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I love Mike Irvin. There's one point I'm on air, and he starts walking hit our direction with his reps all around him, and me and him make direct eye contact, and I felt my heart do a little flutter. I'm like, oh, my God, Michael Irvin looked at me. And I'm like, they go, you want to interview them? One of his reps does and points in our direction. And for a brief moment, my life was complete because Michael Irvin was about to be on 101 and I was about to be interviewing him. And then the next second was total despair because they were talking to the people behind us about interviewing him. But for a second, me and Michael Irvin had some sort of connection there.
Would you have gotten in the weeds? Would you have been immediately like, Michael Irvin, great to see you. Why did they fire Jimmy Johnson? Like, would you have just gotten immediately weird? Or
no,
would you have,
I couldn't have done that to myself.
That was good ball on my part. That's accurate, right?
That is accurate.
I appreciate it.
Well, you were saying you watched the 90s documentary
on the Super Bowl. I was in the Super Bowl mindset. Yeah.
It's a good show.
And it was really good. I'd recommend it on HBO, the Jerry Jones.
It's on Netflix, actually.
If you find yourself not being able to understand Jerry Jones and why he is the way he is, I think that
Which is probably the case for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that documentary is really good at explaining it. I think he deserves a lot more respect than he's been given. But obviously, you can't ignore the long period of inconsistencies and no success.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the boom
the
variety.
The boom variety. Oh. So
now that the Giants fans are back.
And speaking of Owen Kelty.
All of a sudden, yeah.
Owen Kelty's there.
No
one was talking about
this
Owen.
This is probably the highlight of his trip, if I can say so.
Trip or life?
Myself. Dude, probably life.
Both of you guys were just like cheesing about this the whole time when you walked over.
Anyways, we look over. The whole Justice family is there. So AJ and Big Justice and then the mom and the sister, Ashley. They were all over there. And we're like, oh my God, like we got to go say hi. So me and Owen went over. Instead of just saying hi, we took a picture with Big Justice. And it was like, oh my God.
It was Owen who asked.
It was Owen who asked. He goes, can we take a picture? And he's like, yeah. And he like smiles. And we take the picture. But then fast forward a few days. And Tucker, you actually weren't here for this either. We sent videos in the chat, but... We're on the boardwalk.
Oh, I did see that. You found him again.
We're on the boardwalk. Don't say that. On our last day there, and we all split up to get like a snack before going to dinner. Mm. And so Chris is down actually closer to me. Joe walks further down towards the entrance of the boardwalk. In Joe, Texas.
Great boardwalk, by the way.
He goes, oh my God, Big Justice is here. We're like, what? And he sends a
picture.
I
thought he was trolling.
I did too. And then he sends a picture, and it's the whole Justice family. We're like, oh my God, where? He goes, they're in the middle. We're like, wait, where's the middle? So anyways, we start walking back towards the entrance after getting our food. We actually meet up with Joe, and then all of a sudden we see them, and AJ is talking to a fan of the AEW, and he actually ends up giving her his jacket.
Also, owner of AEW, another guy we were rubbing shoulders with all week long, Tony Khan. Go on, Brendan.
Pretty much everybody who was anybody was at Radio Row.
He ends up giving her his jacket. It's her birthday, and they do a whole happy birthday. I actually got this part on video, singing happy birthday, and then AJ goes, all right, let's give her five big booms. And so we all, I have this part on video too of us giving five big booms. And I have video of me and Chris both giving booms for that. And then I'm just going to leave the rest out.
I'll tell the rest. And then we walked by.
Chris said, I'll get it on video.
You tried to
get
a walk by boom. We tried to get a walk by boom on the father of the family. And you went boom. And he completely boom mogged you and did not respond.
I just got ignored.
And that might have been your rock bottom of the trip.
Yeesh.
For Joe Henry, for a guy who was at the Super Bowl to watch his team lose the Super Bowl, I don't know if he had a worse trip than you for getting just utterly boom-mogged.
That's okay. I let that part go out the back of my mind.
Got it.
Kind of forgot that one.
You just started gesture maxing. I'll stop.
So much brain rot from you, Chris. Yeah. It's more than I have ever heard,
It's
actually.
Very entertaining.
This is what happens when your team wins the Super Bowl.
It really is.
Like sunshine and rainbows over there.
Speaking of that.
Every day when he wakes up, it's just a big old smile on his face.
Tucker, and speaking of that, you want to talk about the game? Should we get into the game?
Yeah, we should probably get into the game. I was trying to think of like one last thing to mention about. Shout out to the Stinking Rose, that garlic themed restaurant in San Francisco. That place was awesome.
Really
and,
cool.
And shout out Mel's Drive-In too.
I also didn't give my football thing, and Mel's Drive-In was great.
Oh yeah, your football thing.
That was good. Mel's Drive-In was. I was like a good diner. That was a great diner. Mm. But
Corn
my football thing, I think, when thinking about the obviously being there at the Super Bowl was great. Like I said before, rubbing shoulders with other Seahawks fans. But even being at Radio Row, I think that was my favorite part. The sort of the algorithm on my phone that I scroll through every day for it to be in front of me in a convention hall, like that was
that's what I'm saying.
That was fascinating. Even you know having Seahawks local media, local radio next to us, and the sort of alternating characters that were going in and out of there, from comedians I look up to defensive ends I watched growing up, like Cliff Averill. Like it was just really cool. The camaraderie amongst the Seahawks community, I think, was my favorite part. And being at the game, I mean, I think Coach Ryan Hyland, assistant coach of Fordham men's basketball here. Fordham men's basketball got their third win in a row in the conference last night, by the way.
First,
shout out the Rams.
First time in 5 years they've gotten
first time since our freshman year.
Since
Rose Thrill.
For a three-game win streak in conference.
And they've won five of their last seven in the A-10 as well. But anyway, Coach Ryan Hyland asked me and Joe Henry plainly, what was your favorite part? Haven't seen you since the Super Bowl. What was your favorite part? I immediately was said the national anthem. Immediately. With no hesitation.
Yeah.
That
brings us right into the game.
Right. And I'll pivot us in there. I had a different experience than Brendan and Joe. Brendan and Joe had a more standard sort of beat reporting experience getting into the stadium early.
Poor Joe. They made him sit outside until he managed to get it.
Got him in there.
Right, and eventually got him in just through what I would also call, and I'm afraid to say this, lax security. Very lax security in the Super Bowl. Like, obviously getting into the parking lot and everything
was... I would
was,
say that was only in the auxiliary press section.
I would disagree because I could walk into any section in the entire stadium, and if there was an open seat, I was sitting there with no claim against it. Anyway, City Field's 300 level in the outfield has been more strict to me, but that's a whole other issue. What I wanted to really get to was getting in was great. I had a different experience than you guys. I walked in as a fan. I was meeting people there. I was meeting two friends who I'd never met before, but became my friends as the experience winded down. That was really cool. Going to the tailgate, going to all the experiences in the parking lot. We experienced the fan zone all week. There was almost a fan zone in itself.
There's
in the
one,
parking lot.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And getting in, I just haven't felt a buzz like that. I skipped the NFL store, which
that's big for you.
That's
that's
a level I've never even reached. But then to start the game, I was in the section right below Brendan and Joe just because I wanted to be near them, and I got to see the introductions, the team run out, and the national anthem from there, and that sort of intros me into or brings me into what I was talking about, which is the national anthem. Charlie Puth did a fantastic job, and I mean just a fantastic job for a guy who went to school 30 minutes away from me from New Jersey. To make the claim now that the two New Jerseyans who have said who have sang that national anthem were maybe the two best, that's fantastic. But more than that, it was
what else is new, Chris?
What else is new? Fantastic. Shout out New Jersey. But Tucker, as you can attest to all week as well, even not being at the game, the national anthem had the scale of the week. It was just massive. It felt
absolutely
massive.
I had well-timed flyovers as well.
I was gonna.
That actually gave me goosebumps.
How about the camera work, man?
That's
something you got to experience that we didn't.
The camera work at home was unbelievable. The guy with the camera on Charlie Puth, like, they had it on him. And then as the flyover was happening, he would, like, naturally pan as he was doing the whole time. But then he would slightly pan up, which he had not been doing, and he would catch the flyover as it goes. And the flyover would bring him right back to him. And it would just reset for the second one. Exact same process. And it was so calculated. It was perfect.
Right, and we interviewed someone in the flyover crew throughout the week, and that was really cool. But the actual just national anthem, I think I was a little caught up in the moment and not paying attention in the beginning, but as the song went on, I was just so present in that moment. And I've experienced flyovers before. I experienced one at Arrowhead around half a decade ago that was just insane, but this is just a whole different level, especially the anticipation of hearing the national anthem before you're really excited to watch your team play. That's an energy that everyone can relate to, and that was that at the highest scale, and that was my favorite moment because it truly felt like I was there, and it was the most surreal moment in a week period that was probably the most surreal of my life.
And you're not even mentioning during the national anthem, every seat in the stadium had a towel on it, and you could pan around. I have a video of it. You could pan around the stadium, and you could see the shape of the American flag. There were people with white flags that would go in the shape of a star throughout like a section, and then you had the red sections, the blue sections. Like, that part was nuts to me.
I saw the little directions they had for that. Like, when a stadium, the first time I ever experienced that was when I went to a Jets game when I was growing up, and they had like the organized by quadrants of the stadium for the JETS chant. Like, each quadrant would say a different letter, and then everybody would go in with the Jets, Jets, Jets. And that was the first time I ever saw, like, fan coordination on a mass scale. But, yeah, of course you would do it for the Super Bowl. You touched on something particular, Chris, with that, like, matching the scale. You know, like, they really do scale it up for the Super Bowl every year. I don't know why I'm somehow surprised every year, but, like, the NFL, like, they spare no expense for this.
And it wouldn't feel
look at
the
halftime show too.
Yeah, it wouldn't feel like the Super Bowl without that scale.
They had like 300 people dress up as plants so they could get that many trees out onto the field.
It's America.
Like, that's very smart.
It's very America as well.
We could talk about the halftime show. While we're talking about the performances like non-football related, we could talk about the halftime show a little bit right now. At home, awesome experience. Right. Like they are well produced for TV now. The halftime shows are. I think we've known that ever since the weekend. The COVID year. I mean, that was like there weren't nearly as many people in the stadium, so that one was made primarily for people at home. But now they're kind of like a mix. So I thought it was a good mix, like especially when it's a performance where like people in the stadium can see him physically most of the time. Like when he's when the focus is on him, he is visible to everybody in the stadium at all times.
That was the distinction you just made. I hadn't even made this analogy, but I think it's pretty apt. When WWE went into COVID, they started doing these like theatric matches where there were more movies than actual matches.
Yeah.
They were filmed
cinematic experiences.
And they were filmed not in live time, but more over time, and it was filmed like a film. That sort of distinction between a real wrestling match and whatever that is, that to me is the difference between pre-weekend, pre-COVID Super Bowl performances and what we have now, which is more of a film. More something filmed to be shot once and to be shown in hindsight. Hindsight is the number one thing in Jay-Z and the rest of the Super Bowl halftime show creators' minds. This is going to be shown for generations after us. Like the actual moment, everything happening in real time is so insignificant in comparison to how important it is for the hindsight.
There was even a pre-recorded clip in Bad Bunny's performances that I'm sure you probably wouldn't have caught in the stadium unless you were watching the Jumbotron, because you remember when he fell into the building?
Yeah. That's another point.
That was a pre-record. I'm almost 100% sure that was like a pre-recorded little bit inside the building, and then he like walks to the door in the pre-recording. It ends. He walks out of the door in the actual stadium, probably like a wardrobe change or something. I don't know. I don't think he changed at all during the performance.
And that's another thing with the actual performance. I think I realized what you're saying, that they really prioritize the people at home as opposed to the people in the stadium. But being there, I really saw that. I enjoyed being there. I really wanted to go to a Super Bowl halftime. The fact that I've done it is really cool now. He did a great job. It sounded great as well. The acoustics in the stadium sounded really great. Like, the actual music sounded really good. But I do think that you can even see it. I have a perfect example for it. They just prioritized that millions and maybe even billions of people on TV far more than the people in the stadium. The one thing I've been using to describe that throughout the week when people ask me about it is the stadiums, the jumbotrons that Tucker just referred to. Obviously, as in the nature of what Tucker's discussing, it's hard to see the performance. You use the jumbotron a lot when you're actually in the stadium. Whenever the camera, Tucker, would pan toward him and it would be facing the direction I'm not in, and it would be facing like outward toward what I'm looking at, they would cover the jumbotron and it would be some background graphic because they didn't want him on TV to be shown on the jumbotron and in real life.
Yeah.
So they would rather sacrifice almost 60 to 70% of the stadium not seeing what's happening, as opposed to a minor inconvenience of having two Bad Bunnies on the screen at the same time. That, to me, showed more than anything else and illustrated more than anything else the priorities of the NFL when it comes to the halftime show.
There's give and take, I think. Because you also, like, he also made it so that, like, during the performance, he sang part of one song on the top of, like, a telephone pole.
Yeah.
Where he was clearly visible to everybody.
Right,
and
right,
or
right.
He was standing on top of the house before he jumped through the roof. Like,
and uniquely to this year, I think people were at the game this year for him. Like,
yeah.
Obviously not a lot of people, but there was, whether that...
This was a well-hyped halftime show by the league. Like, I feel like Kendrick's halftime show did not get hyped as much as this. Not nearly as much.
No.
I was still hyped for it, because I like Kendrick Lamar, but I figure only, like, Kendrick Lamar fans were hyped about it. I feel like non-Bad Bunny fans were also looking forward to this for any number of reasons. That kind of brings me toward, like, we've talked about how it looked, how it sounded. I thought the messaging was also, like... really awesome. I liked it. I'm sure everybody has their opinions on it, but I like the messaging. They brought the whole of the Americas in. I've seen a lot of stuff like Canadians were surprised to be included in all of this. It's North and South America. You know, it's the Americas. So
and Central America.
Yeah, I can't believe this is going to happen again, because you're a Central Jersey guy. Central America is a thing, but there's two continents, Chris.
You're crazy. You're crazy.
Oh, my God.
No, the Central America is...
That was the majority of the flags on the field was Central America.
But it's Central America is North America.
God. Don't make me get into this argument for the 100th time in my life, but if you're not in North America and you're not in South America, you just not exist? Like, what do you...
There is nothing. North America goes until Colombia.
That's even worse than the New Jersey one.
Panama's in North America.
Geographically incorrect.
Panama's in North America.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
It just isn't.
All right.
That's your opinion. The fact of the matter is there's a Central America. Anyway, we've also spent too much time on the halftime. Just to wrap up, because we don't have a ton of time left.
I want to
get
bit.
Into the second half, specifically of the game when the lights went down, or the sun went down, and the night came out.
Or when the Patriots came out,
right.
We should say. Because the first half, they didn't really show up.
Right, and I enjoyed watching the Seahawks defense all season long, especially after week one, that devastating loss at home against the Niners. Since then, the defense had been putting out fantastic performances. Spoon, the guy I had on my jersey at the game, performed in a fantastic manner the entire way. I think the consistency of the Seahawks defense and just how consistently deflating they were for the Patriots, it gave them the stage to not maybe necessarily have the best offensive day, but still very comfortably win the Super Bowl. And it turned on in the fourth quarter as well. Two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, including a pick six. The Seahawks did bring the fireworks, even though people will call it the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl from a few years ago.
I agree. I think it was and before I actually get into the game, I want to say one more thing. When the teams were walking out, I don't know how much the TV captured that, but
I think I know what songs were playing.
When the Patriots were being shown on the Jumbotron, but they were still walking through the tunnels, I genuinely got goosebumps because they were playing Duel of the Fates while they were walking through the tunnels. and then they turned to Thunderstruck when they ran out into the field. I was like, oh my God. Like, I texted all my group chats. I'm like, dude, this is electric. Like, Duel of the Fates it's unmatched.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks, theirs wasn't bad. Like, they had 100 shots playing when they ran out into the field. I don't remember what they had in the tunnels, but Duel of the Fates took it for me.
I think if I heard it correctly, I think it was Man in the Box.
Talking about the Seahawks?
When they were still in the tunnel.
I don't know necessarily. Yeah, I don't know what song they ran out to, but they
ran out to 100 Shots by Young Dolph.
Oh, that was what I was just about to pull up. Yeah, I don't know. No, they were in the tunnel to 100 Shots. They came out to something differently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I have a video. I can. I'm not gonna do, but I have a video of it's Cooper Kupp who is kind of greeting each player as they come down the tunnel. It was
But Brendan, thoughts on the game in general? I guess thoughts on the second half, because the first half was like pretty whatever, a bunch of field goals, good defense by the Seahawks. I agree, Chris. I enjoyed watching the Seahawks defense.
Even in the first half, I was entertained. By the way, as auxiliary press, I was sitting in section 207, three rows behind fans. So I got the fan experience a little bit because we were on our feet when they were on their feet, and we were sitting when they were sitting. But I thought even the first half, I thought was relatively entertaining. I think a lot of casual fans, especially like from what my friends have texted and said, like, don't appreciate a good defensive battle.
A couple
of my roommates were like, this game's a snoozer.
Call the boys out right now. Call them out by name.
Two of my roommates, Pat and Jack.
Last names.
Pat Cunningham and Jack Davis.
Thank you.
Oh, boy.
They were like, this game's a snoozer. Like, we couldn't watch. We went and did something else.
A game like this sifts the fans
out.
They
skipped the second half
of
the Super Bowl. I don't care who's playing. It identifies. That's crazy.
Things like this identify what kind of NFL fans people are. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed the defensive performance. Kind of by both teams, because the Pats were still doing a really good job to hold the Seahawks, and I guess much as they could.
Those like were exactly my thoughts. Like,
you tell me it wasn't a game when they scored and got a stop, the Patriots?
It was.
Gonzo put on a show.
And I enjoyed going out there and watching the defenses play well. I mean,
most
Chris, you have to admit
bad
he did.
Sand balls, but that's a separate.
You have to admit he did, especially on that one long ball where he comes up and dives over the top and gets his fingertips on
that
it.
That one was good. That was his best play of the day.
That might have been his best play of the season.
The Njigba ball in the end zone is one of the worst throws Darnold's made all year. Like, that's not... Like, if he didn't pick... In fact, he didn't pick it off actually makes it arguably a bad play.
I agree. There was one that he probably should have picked
off.
The
one in the end zone on the crosser.
I remember.
Route?
He was so bad. He was annoyed at himself that
he had his head in the grass.
He should have picked it. He should have picked it, yes, but you can't say it's a bad play because he didn't pick it. He still got the pass break.
No, I can call it a bad play. Mind on Sam's part.
Yes, you can. But anyways, I am a enjoyer of a good defensive game. I think there's a difference between bad offensive games and good defensive games.
Yeah.
Bad offensive games is where I'll kind of tend to agree with some of those fans who are like, oh, this game's boring, this game's a snoozer, just because it's so sloppy. But this game was a good defensive battle between the two teams who we knew coming in defense was their strengths. We kind of figured it was going to be a lower scoring game. And then the defenses come out and they perform, whether it was big sacks on early downs, third downs, pass breakups, sending pressures. It was a chess match on defense, and that's something that I really enjoyed in this game, especially in the first half. But also, you look at the second half when there started to be a bit more scoring. Again, the defense still came out to play, got stops when they needed to. The Patriots, they scored, got a stop, and then it became a game, like you said, Chris. I think the game was very entertaining.
Yeah, and I think maybe without the, like, it's more of a Boston City thing, but if they didn't have that Patriots magic lust on them, I wouldn't have been as nervous. But in the fourth quarter, when they score a touchdown, especially on Tariq Woolen, who has been sort of the Achilles heel of the Seahawks team all year long, even referring back to that week one game I just talked about against the Niners, for them to then get a stop after that, which they've had trouble doing aside from, you know, Myers field goals, and they have the chance to go score, you can't tell me anybody watching that game thought it was just over. You have to be an extremely confident Seahawks fan, which I was. I thought maybe they'd get a stop, something like that. But going to go with a chance to make it one score in the fourth quarter with more than 10 minutes on the clock, that's a competitive football game. I don't want to hear any of this nonsense.
I felt so bad because I was sitting next to Joe Henry, one of our big Patriots fans here, and Griffin texts our Super Bowl group chat, and as Joe goes down to check the text, that's when Matt Collins scores, and Joe completely missed it. I'm like, Joe, and I turn around, I grab him.
Stevenson was rage baiting over text messages.
I see he's looking down at his phone, and he looks up. I'm like, Joe, you missed it. They scored. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, the Patriots scored. And so he like turns and looks, and he's able to catch like whatever replay they showed. I don't think they really showed a full replay on the board. But I really felt bad for him in that moment.
Yeah, that and losing the Super Bowl is tough. But
he was a good sport about that, actually, Chris.
He
is a good sport, and that's
There's
why
no way.
It's not fun for me to like to rub it in his face either. It's unfun to gloat to Joe Henry.
Yeah, I don't think as a Patriots fan you could really like fully think that bad about this loss, because this was a really tough game.
That was one thing he said too.
I'll give my final thoughts. I will say I called a scoreless first quarter while we were there, and it wound up 3-0. The Seahawks kicked a field goal early, but either way, I was close on that, and it was a low scoring game up until that fourth quarter when the Pats started rolling a little bit on offense, and the Seahawks had to kind of lock in.
And they took advantage with a defensive touchdown.
They did, yeah. And it was at the point in the game where the Patriots had to force it down the field, so there was no choice. And like of course, shout out Julian Love, former Giant, for the interception.
Shout out Julian Love, and you're really not going to shout him out as a Notre Dame Fighting Irish either?
Yeah, we could do that too.
I thought that was your thing. It's definitely not my thing.
I didn't have it off the top of my head. No. Did not know he was
good
Notre
at Notre Dame. I thought you were, I was saying it because I thought you remember him playing there.
Honestly, it was probably more towards like Florida State at that point while he was there, because I'm assuming this was this was multiple years ago.
And let me gloat on two NFL mic'd up things. I would recommend anybody to go watch the mic'd up around 50-minute video they put out for the game. It's just so cinematic, and the clips they get are great. Julian Love, before his interception drive, refers to the whole defense, says, we got to get the ball here, got to get the ball back, and then says to himself, I'm going to do it. And then goes out on the field. Next scene is a pick. Also Love, shout out Gray Zabel, my first round pick out of North Dakota State, a product of FCS football, out there on the first play of the game making a great block, and then telling that D-line of the Patriots, I'm ready to die today. That was the tone set right there, and it was simply unrecoverable.
I also thought the Julian Love clip was pretty cool, where he pulls Drake May's
talking to Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, that was where he's fantastic. Like, you can see when he sets that back foot, he's going to wait another second and then he's going to fire. And he did it literally every time. Like, you could go watch the clips from the game. It's how he steps back before he throws. He takes that extra second to check if it's good, and then he goes. And that's how Love came down with the football. But yeah, either way, I thought like the TV experience was pretty fun. I watched it at a bar with my friends from freshman year, so that was a fun experience. But I told you guys before the show, I remember a little bit too much about the inside of that bar, and I think that speaks to how slow this game got at times. The defense was still, it can be appreciated. I'd certainly appreciated it in the first half, but by the second half, Patriots still don't score after the third quarter. It's like, at this point, it's kind of over. Everybody's heads kind of perked up when they started scoring a little bit, and it got a little bit close. But that pick was just nail in the coffin. We're done here. The Seahawks fans could finally breathe. The Patriots fans who were left in the building finally consigned to go home.
And Tuck, can I give a brief look into next year for the Seahawks as well?
Sure, if you want to.
Just really brief, a couple minutes. The Seahawks, obviously, are a young team, and a lot of their players are younger guys, and they have a lot of cap space. Those have been sort of the storylines for the Seahawks when thinking about them past this season. The one thing is, they got a lot of guys coming up on free agency this summer. They're going to have to make a lot of decisions, whether that's Kenneth Walker or Tariq Woolen, which a lot of fans think they're going to move on from.
Plenty of cap space, though.
Yes, or it's guys like Josh Job, or it's guys like Rashid Shaheed. A lot of guys are going to be points of conversation and guys they're going to have to make a decision on. The Seahawks have a lot of flexibility right now in this offseason to kind of directly impact what their core and what their team will look like going forward. They already have, obviously, a Super Bowl roster in front of them. To turn it over to another Super Bowl roster, that's going to be kind of the goal.
They do have their path cut out for them, because you also have a lot of teams. I mean, even look at the Patriots. Drake May is going to be in his third year, Vrabel in his second. You have some teams in the AFC who competed this year who are going to be back. You have NFC teams who are retooling and making a push as well. Even in their own division, you'll have a healthy 49ers team. You'll have a Rams team who Matt Stafford is probably going to be out for vengeance in one of his, if not his, last year in the league. So definitely going to be a difficult path, Chris.
Definitely.
Well, I know about another second-year quarterback who has
Dart is not going
a brand-new head coach.
Dart is not even making the playoffs.
Who has experience almost getting to the Super Bowl with the Ravens and also experience getting to the Super Bowl
Ravens. Harbaugh didn't get to a Super Bowl for 8 years with Lamar Jackson. I'm sure it'll work out with Jackson Dart.
You don't got to worry about all that.
Jackson Dart might just be a perennial Pro Bowl snub.
Genuinely, like, and I don't mean to talk about it too much. I like the Harbaugh move, but if I'm a Raven fan, if I look at Raven fans, the last thing I'm doing is judging them for being upset about John Harbaugh and being upset about not hiring Mike McDonald. Two things they should have done, but again, I digress.
All right. Well, gents, the season is over. Super Bowl 60, 29-13, the Seattle Seahawks defeat the New England Patriots.
Woo!
And become the world champions.
Let's go.
Champions of the NFL, the Seattle
the world,
Seahawks. Unbelievable.
Baby. Let's go.
How about that?
Got to get my new ring. I have a replica ring I brought up from home yesterday.
You know, football fans are absolutely insatiable, so you already know that win totals are already out most places where you can place bets.
My God.
That's going to wrap us up on this Super Bowl edition of NFL Friday, and I think that pretty much wraps us up for what you could call this season, because the next time NFL Friday is going to be active is for that NFL Draft live show that we've started doing every year. But that's going to do it for us today. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Brendan Shorey and Chris Carino, for Joe Henry, Griffin Stevenson, and Owen Kelty, who accompanied us to San Francisco. Also want to shout out our sports director, Bobby Cheffardini, and thank him for the incredible opportunity to go to Radio Row to go and represent the station, represent
Absolutely.
Fordham University. I have been Tucker Austin, and NFL Friday is a production of WFUV Sports.